The reading is from Luke chapter 12, verses 22 to 34. That's on page 1045 of the Church Bible. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wild flowers grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon, in all his splendor, was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also."
Thanks, Anne. Can you hear me? Am I there? Yes? Good. Great. It's lovely to meet you all. So my name's Barney. I'm a member of the church here for nearly 20 years. I'm starting to feel like I've been around quite a long time. You don't need to know much about me apart from that I am a bit of a worrier. I have that sort of natural tendency to worry about stuff that most people would probably just, you know, gloss over. It's fine. We had the eclipse this week, didn't we? And it's a good job I wasn't with my family, because I'm exactly the sort of parent who would have spent all the time, "Don't look straight at it, don't look straight at it, don't look straight at it." Once in a generation time to enjoy an eclipse, and my kids would have been going, "Why are we lying face down? I don't feel like I'm enjoying this, Dad." Don't look at it. It's a worry. My wife and I have had to agree not to discuss stressful news events shortly before bed, because she's not a worrier, and she'll casually say something like, "Oh, did you read that thing about how the UK is on the brink of total social collapse? Anyway, night." And I'll be awake till the small hours, sort of stewing about this thing. Worry and anxiety is a powerful thing, isn't it? The mind and the body's alarm system going into overdrive, desperately trying to control and predict an uncertain future. There's a line from a film that I must have seen 1,000 times with my son, which is this, sort of philosophical: the key to a happy life is to accept you are never actually in control. I don't know what sort of philosophical films you think we watch. That's actually from Jurassic World. There's not much life advice in Jurassic World. Run from dinosaurs and accept that you're not in control. But it's quite good advice, except that it's really, really hard to do. The sense that we are not in control, that something might happen that we cannot predict or control, is scary. At least it is for me, and I'm sure there'll be others of you out there who sometimes lie awake in the small hours thinking about the stuff that bothers you and worries you, and you don't know what's coming around the corner. And maybe that's not you. Maybe you don't think of yourself as a worrier. But let me challenge you to wonder if maybe you're more familiar with anxiety's children than anxiety itself. I think anxiety can lead to all kinds of stuff. Anger, accusation, avoidance. I actually am familiar with all of those things as a response to when I can't control something, I'm worried about something. And I know that for some of us, it's a really powerful and frequent thing to experience anxiety. It will sometimes require professional or medical support. And can I just say at the start, the Bible absolutely understands and sympathizes with your anxiety. In fact, that's our whole first point. The Bible understands that our worries are real. The reality of our anxiety, the Bible doesn't dismiss it. It acknowledges it. In fact, here is Jesus spending a portion of his time with his disciples teaching them about worry. I often think that the Bible feels like it's written for worriers like me, actually. Luke wrote his gospel in Greek, and he actually uses two words for worry, and we don't see this in the English translation, so it's interesting just to dwell upon it a moment. If you look at verse 22, where it says, "Do not worry," and verse 25, when it says, "Who of you by worrying?" That word, I read, apparently, is merizo, which describes a divided mind, a mind pulled apart by concern, kind of a fractured mind. I don't know if you know that one from the small hours of the morning sometimes. And interestingly, in case you are like wondering, we see this word in a few other places. I've just picked one. It's 2 Corinthians 11:28. "Besides everything else, I face the daily pressure of my anxiety." It's that same word, my anxiety for all the churches. Now that's Paul speaking, right? Paul, the spiritual giant. The Bible doesn't think our worry is silly. The Bible acknowledges that our worry is very real. There's another word, though, verse 29. That word worry there, it's actually the only time it's used in the whole New Testament, and it's the word meteoros, which is this idea of being suspended, unanchored, not with feet on the ground, but floating. It's actually linked to the word we now use for meteor, something that hasn't landed. Elsewhere in classical writing, the same word apparently is used to describe ships being tossed at sea, right? Not anchored, but floating and suspended and a state of worry. Jesus knows that that is real. The mind pulled apart by worry, or that sense of waiting anxiously for something, floating, suspended. Jesus is not telling his disciples off, and he's not telling us off for worrying. He does not think it's silly. Matthew 26:28. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." Jesus' own words, that sense of being overwhelmed. He knows something is coming, which is kind of feels inevitable, and he can't control it, and he's scared. Jesus understands our worries, and I think it's just so important to acknowledge that the Bible acknowledges that. But he does also want to rescue us from it, or at least to help us with it. And I think when he says, "Do not worry," we can read that like when I tell my children not to do something, most of the time that's actually for me. "Don't cry. It's because I can't stand the noise." "Do not worry" is not for Jesus. It's for us. It's for the disciples in this passage. He doesn't want them to be burdened with that worry. And so that's our second main point, is he's going to show his disciples and us that he understands the causes of our anxiety, the things which make us worry. I think on two levels, right? So the surface stuff, and then he gets to the root. The surface stuff, look at verse 22. Jesus shows he gets it. "Do not worry about your life, what you will eat, your body, what you will wear." Jesus knows we're concerned about those practical, everyday things. And all the other things that you might put in that category today, mortgages and bank statements and jobs and exam results and this daily stuff that we worry about. He sees that. He doesn't dismiss it. And actually, look at verse 30. "Your Father knows that you need them." He knows those triggers exist, the things which make us worry. Now, I don't know what pulls you apart or keeps you suspended with worry. For me, quite often it's silly things. When I was really young, I was often too worried to go upstairs on my own at night because I was worried that there'd be a burglar, wait for it, hiding in the toilet. That was my fear. And I get that was some like odd childish manifestation of, I can't see what's up there. I'm worried about it. When I got a bit older and bought my first house, not because I have more than one, but the one we first bought, it was that I was worried that my house would flood when I was away. Like, we used to go away sometimes over winter. I was worried I'd get, like, a burst pipe or something. I've obviously got some kind of plumbing phobia, burglars in toilets, burst pipes at home. Silly worries, really. But there are so many things to worry about, aren't there? There's some serious and heavy stuff. We had the prayers earlier about those places in the world where people have stuff to really be anxious about. What about the children of Kiev right now in Ukraine, or the mothers of Sudan? Like, it's worrying stuff. And Jesus, I think he gets all of that. He gets our silly worries, and he gets our really serious and heavy worries. He understands those causes. But he also drills a bit deeper. So have a look down to where I think we see the root cause. Verse 28. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today, and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little... And I wonder how you honestly end that verse yourself. How much more will he clothe you, you of little cash? If only I just had a bit more money, I wouldn't have to worry so much. How much more will he clothe you, oh, you of little time? If I just had a bit more time, I could deal with all my stuff. I wouldn't be so busy. Oh, you of little information. If I just knew what was going to happen, or if I knew the outcome of that thing, that result, that test, whatever it is, then I wouldn't be so worried. And those things are very real, right? I don't think the Bible dismisses that stuff either. There's lots of good practical ways we can deal with stuff, medical support, financial help, planning our time, finding stuff out so we can try and put our worries to bed. Those are all good godly steps. But let me gently and lovingly suggest that if we woke up tomorrow and all that stuff was fixed, we'd still find stuff to worry about. Our hearts would still be anxious. If a worry was caused by a lack of money, then rich people would never be worried, right? Or powerful people wouldn't be worried if it's about a lack of control, but powerful people worry too. And anyway, that's not how Jesus finishes the sentence, is it? Famously, this phrase, it's one of those that's passed into common usage in the English language. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? Jesus says our worries and our anxieties are linked in some way to a littleness of faith. And I'm using that word carefully. Don't mishear Jesus here. I don't think he is saying, if you get worried about stuff, you clearly don't believe in God at all. Your faith is broken. If you're anxious, then you clearly is an absence of faith. But it doesn't say an absence of faith. He says, you of little faith. Paul got worried. We saw that earlier. He was anxious about stuff. The Psalms are full of David being racked with worry about stuff. Who's he talking to? He's talking to his disciples. Committed followers of him, do not worry, he says. He's not saying they're not real believers. He's saying that there's something about the littleness of their faith that is linked to their worry. So worry is less like forsaking and not believing. It's more like forgetting. And forgetting what? Let's look at verse 30, because I think this is where Jesus paints this picture of what we forget when we worry. So verse 30, for the pagan world runs after all such things. That phrase, the pagan world, it refers to all those in Jesus' hearing at the time, all those who didn't believe in God, weren't part of the kingdom of Israel, weren't part of the covenant, didn't know the one true God. And the point Jesus is making, I think, is that there's these two spiritual worlds that we can inhabit. The pagan world of that time, the Greco-Roman pagan world with gods who were fickle and moody and had to be bought off with offerings. And even when you did all your offerings right, you just never knew if the goddess Fortuna was going to wipe it all away with no rhyme or reason. You live with that sort of dread, that worry. I've done everything right, but it might not work out because luck might take it all from me. Jesus is saying to his followers, that's not the world you live in. Yes, it was the world they lived in. They lived in that Greco-Roman time, right? But he's saying that's not the world you really live in. Look at the second half of the verse. The pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. They live in a world with a loving God in charge, not a fickle, unpredictable, capricious world where anything can happen, but a God in charge who's compassionate and constant. Psalm 145, 8-9, what is that God like? The Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, rich in love. The Lord is good to all. He's had compassion on all he's made. That's the world they live in. That's their spiritual reality. And the little faith thing is like they forget that. Surrounded by the pagan Greco-Roman world as they were, or for us, surrounded by other idols and ways to try and control our future, forgetting, if you're a Christian here today, forgetting that the spiritual world you inhabit is one with a loving God in charge. And that brings us to our third point, the solution to anxiety. And I guess in some ways it's simple, but these things are never quite so simple, are they? But on the surface, the solution for anxiety, if the anxiety is caused by a littleness of faith, forgetting what God is really like, then the solution is one word, right? Remember. Remember what your God is like. Now, one of the reasons it's not as simple as that, and let me say again what I said at the start, is that for some of us, anxiety is really debilitating and powerful, and it is absolutely right to seek professional and medical support for that. Don't forget the guy who writes this gospel, Luke, he's a doctor. He absolutely understands practical earthly care. But the Bible does give us a spiritual dimension to this thing, anxiety, as well. Remind yourself what God is like. Dwell upon his promises. In the same way, when I took my kids to Pleasurewood Hills, has anyone been to Pleasurewood Hills? What a marvelous place. If you haven't, you're missing out. Go down, right, and go and wipe out Norfolk's biggest roller coaster. And I think only, maybe? It's one of those advertising claims. But when I sit on that, I get a bit worried. I get a bit scared. But what do we do? If you're anything like me on those things, what you do is you sit there reminding yourself of all the reasons why you don't have to be scared. Right? There's how many thousands of people have been on this thing before? All the safety testing. If there had been a problem, I'd have heard about it in the news. Like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. There are concrete reasons, and I'm going to bring them to mind now to just reassure myself that it's all going to be okay. And that's what we're going to do now with Jesus' guidance in this passage. The solution to anxiety, reminding ourselves, dwelling upon what God is like. We've got three C's that we're going to do this with, if this helps you remember. Three letter C's. The first one is that God cares. He does care. Anxiety tells us that someone doesn't care about us, that no one's looking after us. And look at verse 24. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. God cares about you. Now, it's just interesting. The word consider there does mean consider. Spend a bit of time on it. So we're just going to do that briefly now. Consider the ravens, Jesus says. So let's do that. There's a documentary, by the way, currently, I think it's on Amazon, called What Ravens Do, the documentary you never knew you needed. But it's quite interesting. And what it shows us, and Jesus, it's not like he hadn't seen that documentary. He would have said the same things. Ravens aren't exempt from difficult lives. There's lots of challenge in the life of a raven. You know, they have to work hard and forage and find food, and they face harsh winters and difficulties and challenges. And I don't think Jesus is promising us a life free from hardship and challenge when he says, don't worry, consider the ravens. What he is promising us is, like, there is a God who provides. How does the verse end? God feeds them. He looks after them. Consider them. It's not always easy for them, but God feeds them. He gives them exactly what they need in the middle of that hardship and that hard work that they have to put in. And how much more valuable are you? He cares. Our second C, God is in control. He cares and he's in control. And also, by the way, we aren't in control. Look at verse 25. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? This is a picture of the village I lived in, I grew up in, and this, you can't quite tell, this is going up a hill, and I've got this vivid mental image of my mum one evening when my dad was later home than he should have been from an evening somewhere. Standing on this corner in her dressing gown, I went out to join her, I think, fretting, worrying, because my dad wasn't back. And I joined her out there, and we just worried. Did us standing out there do anything to make my dad safer or speed him home? Or who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Maybe it's time to rewrite that Jurassic World quote. The key to a faithful life is to accept that you're never actually in control, but God is. Whether we live long, happy, healthy lives isn't up to us, but it is up to God, and he is on it, right? Verse 24, God feeds the ravens. He does do that. Verse 28, God clothes the grass of the field. He's in control. He does that. If you're familiar with the book of Job, the story of a man who went from a brilliantly successful kind of beautiful picture of a life, it's an awful catastrophe, terrible experience. And one of the conversations he has with God, and he does have it as a conversation in Job 38, God reminds him that even when everything was good, Job was never in control. He maybe thought he was, but it was an illusion. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation, God says to Job? Have you given orders to the morning? Have you shown the dawn its place? So the Bible's response to anxiety is to remind us that we aren't in control. It's not to give us some illusion that we are. It's like, no, you're not. God's in control. And by the way, he cares. He cares for the ravens. He cares for you. He provides what you need. And he has the control to do that. So God cares. God is in control. But there's an elephant in the room, isn't there? You and I both know that it doesn't always turn out okay. We have a caring God, and so often I look back at stuff that I was worried about, and I can see that God has provided. I look back and I go, oh, he gave us just what we needed at just the right time. But not always. It doesn't always turn out okay. Consider the ravens. They're facing the trials of a dark, cold winter, or a food shortage, or the grass of the field that so quickly withers is thrown into the fire. Like, it doesn't always work out okay. And there'll be so many times that you and I can all count when our anxieties about money or health or jobs or relationships or loved ones or whatever it is, like, it really doesn't turn out okay. And it ends up hurting. So our third C, I think, helps us with that. God cares. He's in control, and perhaps the most surprising one, he crowns. Now, that word isn't in the text, so I'm going to need to show you why I think we can use that word and what we mean by it. Have a look at verse 32. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. See, the gospel story is that our ultimate problem is not our water bill or our lack of food or even the devastating things that can happen in the world, conflicts and illness, and that's not our ultimate problem. Our ultimate problem is our sin. And what does our sin do? It separates us from God. It threatens to exclude us from his loving kingdom. But do not be afraid, little flock. Through the cross and resurrection, God has welcomed you back in. He's brought you back into the kingdom. And the reason that that word faith fits in here, oh, you of little faith, oh, me of little faith, is because it's faith. Simply recognizing our need for that rescue from the problem of sin and simply trusting that Jesus has done it all to put that right. It's faith that brings us home. And this is the amazing bit. Such is the lavishness of God's grace, his forgiveness, that he doesn't just bring us into the kingdom as like doorkeepers and servants, and he crowns us. There's a number of verses which point us in this direction. I'll pick one of them. It's a special verse. Psalm 103, verse 4. Some of you will know it. He redeems your life from the pit and crowns you with love and compassion. You see, if God's goal were our maximum earthly comfort, then every hardship, every unanswered prayer, every anxiety come true would seem like a failure of his care and a lack of his control. But because his ultimate goal is to crown us with salvation, his care looks like preparing us for eternity, not insulating us from every worry and every fear and every bad outcome. And that can feel hard, right? But it's where the certainty of our hope is too. We're just going to another couple of minutes, but I want us to look quickly at the verse 31 and verse 32. I don't know if you noticed anything odd about them. In verse 31, we get the instruction to seek his kingdom. In verse 32, your father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. So which is it? Do we have to find it? Do we have to seek it? Or is he given it to us already? And the answer is, gloriously and lovingly, both. Because God cares and because he's in control, he has given us the kingdom already. That invitation to salvation, that crown of eternal life, is already ours by grace if you're a Christian here today. So there are plenty of things to worry about, but that ultimate crown of salvation is unshakably secure. And that's why Jesus can issue the challenge in that verse that some of you have been thinking about, verse 33, sell your possessions. Now, I don't think this is a call to get rid of all our stuff and live like medieval monks. I think it is a call to stop living like our stuff can cure our worries. I don't know if you were here last week. If you weren't, go back on YouTube or just read the passage above. The rich fool who Jesus talks about, who amassed all this wealth in these big barns and then felt safe. Now I'm secure, now I can eat, drink, and be merry because I've got this security in my barns. And it turned out he was not in control at all. That stuff did nothing for him. And here, at the kind of the bookend of this piece of teaching, Jesus offers the antidote to that. Reject, he says, the illusion that your stuff can save you. Loosen your grip on your earthly sources of security and turn instead to him. Because it's not only that in this passage Jesus gives us some advice about anxiety. It's not just that as a wise teacher, he gives us some answers to anxiety. Jesus is the answer to our anxiety. One of my favorite verses, Romans 8:32. He, that's God, who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? If he can do that huge thing, he could do anything to look after you and me. He can give us everything that we need. If he can do that phenomenal thing, then he can help us with the small stuff too. See, Jesus' death on the cross is proof that he cares. It's proof that he's in control. But it's also a reminder on a deeper level that actually that really is all that we need. The gracious guarantee of a crowning treasure in heaven. Look at that verse at the end. It will never fail. No thief comes near. No moth destroys. So verse 31, in the face of anxiety, what do? Seek his kingdom, but not seek like hide and seek. Not seek like, where is it? Does anyone know? Seek like the point of a compass seeks north. There is an unshakable reality beyond ourselves, and we can align ourselves with that. Line ourselves up with the unshakable security that God offers us through Christ. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Shall we pray? Father God, you know what is in our hearts. You know the small stuff and the big stuff that we worry about. And you don't dismiss that. You understand it. And you encourage us to turn to you with it. We thank you that you care for us. We thank you that you are in control of everything that happens. And we thank you above all that you offer us that ultimate security, that ultimate unknown is known. Our future is perfectly secure in you. The crown of salvation is given to us by grace. And we praise you for that. In Jesus' name, amen.